It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. Today, we had a great conversation with a new friend of mine. Just met her today. She is the founder of SWIG. Her name is Nicole Tanner. Can't wait for you to take a listen. Let's get proximate. Friends, and we have a guest here today that all of you probably will know. And if you don't know her personally by name, you will know her business. We have Nicole Tanner, the founder of SWIG. Yes. And I am so excited to meet you here today.
Thank you. It's a privilege to be here. I need to do a disclaimer. I woke up with a rough sounding voice this morning. I don't usually have this sexy of a voice.
Yeah. But we're loving it for the pod today.
Today I do. So yes, I'm just glad I can speak. I may have a few octaves that go up and down, but it'll make it interesting. So it's good. But thank you for having me.
Oh, I'm so happy to have you here. So happy to meet you today for the first time.
Yes.
And just really excited to get into your story. Let's go back into the way back and let's talk about where you grew up and a little bit about your family of origin.
Love it. That's so important because we all have a story from when we're just little, right? Yeah. So I grew up on a farm in Teton Valley, Idaho, a little town called Victor, Idaho. Best Huckleberry Shakes around. It was an amazing way to grow up. From a family of eight children, I was five of eight, and we grew up
Five of ten.
So you're number five,
yes.
The middle child.
Yeah, we have to do stuff so people know we're still here.
We totally do. And we're the peacekeepers and we just kind of roll with it and whatever. Yeah. So I love that. So grew up on a farm. I knew what hard work was it was a dairy farm. Plus we had hay and barley and potatoes and all the things. And so my dad's workers were his kids, right?
Yep.
Your free labor. I don't know how we did it with the patience level, because your kids as your laborers is not a very fun way to do things.
Yeah, I know.
But it taught me how to just work hard. And I compare owning a restaurant, honestly, to like a dairy farm.
Yes.
You can't ever leave it. Like it, you are married to it. It is day in, day out. And it almost kind of prepped me for owning, you know, my own business and a restaurant, even though I had no idea I would be selling fountain drinks in the future. But yeah, an amazing way to grow up. Teton Valley is just gorgeous. I call it paradise, heaven on earth. I didn't appreciate it growing up because who does, you know? I just wanted something bigger and grander and more exciting. It was an amazing place to grow up. I loved it.
So is it close to? I have a sister that's in Star Valley.
Okay, so we're super close. In fact, I compare Teton and Star Valley. They're very similar. So we are on the other side of Jackson Hole, Wyoming.
Okay.
So 40 minutes from Rexburg, BYU, Idaho.
Yep.
Yeah, on your way from Rexburg to Jackson Hole, you will go right through Teton Valley, right through Driggs and Victor.
Okay.
Yeah. So I say we've got the more beautiful side of the Tetons, the Idaho side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So beautiful.
Yeah.
It is just gorgeous up there.
It is.
Star Valley is one of our favorite places. But amazing. Winter's a little rough, yes?
Winters are rough. And I often am like, how did I do this? Like, I was on the drill team and would scrape a hole. I wouldn't wake up in time to thaw my car.
Yeah.
So I'd scrape a hole in the window and just drive, like, with this little tiny hole and on snowy, crazy roads. And I made it. I mean, I don't know how I did.
How did we do these things?
How did we do those hard things?
Yeah.
I go up there now just in the summer.
Because
I live in St. George.
The summer is fabulous. Yeah.
Yeah, the summer is amazing. So I get out of the heat in St. George and go up to where it's just fabulous in the summer.
So fun. I remember I have a memory of my sister and I driving our old farm truck to school every day. But when it had this thing where, like, wouldn't latch, the hood wouldn't latch very good.
Oh gosh.
And we'd be driving down. So talk about a little hole. So yeah. we would drive down to, and thankfully the school wasn't terribly far and it was mostly on a dirt road, but like the hood would pop up all of a sudden. And I'm like, ah,
okay, so hold up. Luckily there weren't a lot of cars and you could pull over and okay, let's fix that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Push it down.
Jump on the hood.
Honestly, you learn to problem solve.
Yeah.
At an early age when you grew up on a farm. Yeah. That's what you do.
So 8 brothers and sisters?
Yeah, 7. So there's 8 of us, but yeah, 7 brothers and sisters. 4 girls and 4 boys. So my parents planned it really well.
Oh, so split even.
Yeah,
Very split even.
Yeah.
Good. So what kinds of things did you get into? I mean, so you were a drill team, so you were a dancer. What other stuff did you do?
I was also a cheerleader, and I also played basketball. When you come from a high school of a graduating class of 55, then you get a chance to do everything. So it was amazing, though, because I was able to try my hand at many different things. But yeah, drill team all 4 years, cheerleading 3 years, basketball 3 years. But I loved it. I absolutely loved it. You knew everybody in your high school, probably knew a little too much about everybody in the high school. So there's like good and bad to that, right?
Yep.
You know, dated guys usually outside of the valley because, you know, there was options outside
and you
there.
You were related to all the ones.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep, we know.
Exactly. So true. Definitely went to a few proms with my cousins. So yeah, but, no, it was amazing. Like I teased that the best, funnest thing to do was to go to our drive-in movie theater. It was amazing. That was the hangout spot.
Do you still have one up there?
Yeah. In fact, the saddest thing, it's called the Spud Drive-In Theater,
which is
like the perfect name, right? Because we're potato farmers up there. It actually, with all the wind we had this winter, it blew down. The whole screen blew down.
Oh, no.
The saddest thing, it was made, you know, the news, and I'm very, very sad. So I don't know if they'll get it up and going, but it was literally the best, funnest thing to do.
Yeah, we still have ours. Ours is in Mount Pleasant, the Basin Drive-In.
Yeah, the best.
Yeah, best burgers. Anybody wants to go get the best burgers in town?
Yes, we had what's called a Gladys Burger, which was the name the owners were. That was the lady's first name. But yeah, so that's kind of a monument that now is not there anymore.
No,
but yeah, amazing. You have to make your own fun when you grow up in a small town. And like I said, you get creative. And one of the worst things I ever did, my parents teased me, is we got bored one day and we went and got orange pylon cones and decided to block off the highway, the main road through town, which is not much. We blocked it off with orange pylon cones and then watched and waited to have cars stop, move the cones, get out, and then until the cops came. And that was like the craziest thing I ever did. So, I mean, the silly stuff like that.
And you usually know the cops and they're like, knock it off and go home.
He's like, so I have Nicole here. What do you want me to do? Yeah. So, and they tease like that was the worst thing I ever did. Yeah.
So great.
So funny.
I don't think I did anything too crazy with the cops, but I had a brother who was pushed the edge a little bit, but we have the Manti pageant. And it was like a huge thing, like at the Manti Temple.
Yeah.
And, you know, thousands of people.
Love it. Who hasn't been to the Manti pageant?
So great.
Love it.
So one year when my brother was in high school, I shouldn't be telling on him. I won't tell which brother. But he and his buddies decided it would be really fun to just grab one of the city, like, big garbage cans and start a fire in it.
Oh.
And like,
yeah,
roast marshmallows and hot dogs and sell them to the traffic, you know, to the
great idea. To the, like, he's really trying to
entrepreneurial spirit.
Yeah, I feel it. I love it.
Yeah. And that wasn't great because apparently it's illegal to start a fire in a city dumpster on the highway.
Go figure. Go figure. I mean, hindsight, right? But he didn't think it all the way through. He's like, this sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Why has no one done this before?
Teenage brains.
Yes.
You know, they're not fully developed. It's
totally
fine. It's
totally. And it's fine. In a small town, it's fine.
Yeah, no, it's good.
Yeah, yeah.
Nowadays you can't get it. You can't be doing stuff like that.
No, darn it.
Yeah, it's
darn
fun
it.
Time.
Yeah.
So yeah. Oh, that's so fun that you grew up there. So talk a little bit about. So you were on dairy farm, and it is. We were on a farm, and then like you can't leave.
Yeah.
Like, camping was really the only thing we ever did for like a vacation, and it was like maybe we'd run down and milk the cows and whatever. But
yeah.
So what what happened after that? You wanted to get out, and then what?
Yeah. I went to BYU Idaho. I call it Ricks, so because that's what it was. So I went to Ricks for 2 years and got my degree in my associate's degree in office education, so secretarial, an administrative assistant is what it was. And so then I got that and moved down to Provo and worked for a company called Dynex. They automated library systems, and I was an executive assistant for the marketing director. Okay. So I did that for a couple years and met my husband and got married, and then on from there. Have 5 beautiful children, 3 grandbabies. The grandma life is a good life. It's actually the best life. Way better than parenting.
I've heard.
It's amazing. And you love them like you love your kids.
Yeah.
In fact, even sometimes more.
But they're nicer. They're nicer.
Yeah. You don't have to do all the hard stuff. You just get to love on them and spoil them. Yeah. No, it's the best.
So. And then when did you end up in St. George?
So we moved to St. George in 2007 to help out a friend with the housing industry that was booming, right? Mm-hmm. 2006, 2007. And then the next year it tanked. Yeah. And the recession hit. So we lived in Colorado, working for the family business for 12 years before that. That's where I had like 3 of my babies was in Colorado in the Four Corners area.
Okay.
And so we moved back there for about 2 months, 3 months. It was for the summer. And my kids were like, no, we want to go back to St. George. At that point, they were 5 and 15, from 5 to 15. And those teenage years are pretty pivotal. And so we moved back to St. George, not knowing what we were going to do. No job, just knowing that it was the best place to raise our kids. And we thought of Swig. We would go to Sonic all the time and would go get our Diet Coke with lime because they have the good pebble ice and the foam cup that would hold that ice and that drink cold for hours. And sometimes the line would be long and your cup would come out smelling like onions or burgers or fries. And you're like, okay, well, I guess this is the only option. Or you walk into your local gas station and get your drink fix there, your caffeine fix, and get out of your car, unbuckling all of your kids, taking the risk that they're not going to come out with chips and candy bars and all of that. And it's risky to go into a gas station with kids.
Truly, very
risky.
Yeah.
So we just thought there's got to be a better way to get our drink fix, our caffeine fix. And why does this not exist out there? We couldn't see any other thing like it out there. And so honestly, that is how it all began. It's like, this is something that we would appreciate. Why does it not exist? And it doesn't. So let's try it. Let's do it.
That's incredible. I want to get into your story and exactly like the process of because starting a business is crazy. And so I want to get into
the restaurant business.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I want to get into that when we come right back.
Love it.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Tanner, the founder of Swig, and we want to get into the people have ideas. They don't always see it through because it's tough, right?
Yes, so tough.
Yeah. So, I mean, like when I was a kid, my dad started a business. It didn't do well. It failed. And I have I am super risk averse because of that.
Right.
Like
sure.
It, you know, you have these experiences as a youth figuring out things. And to me, for me, it was like, nope, I just want security, security, security. Mm-hmm. So What inspires you? How do you put away those fears of like, how does this work? And, all the naysayers that tell you it's never going to work.
Right.
Let's talk about how that process plays out.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I've got so many thoughts on that. I think that there's always going to be naysayers, right? And it's funny, once we started it, people were like, oh, why didn't I think of that? Yeah. Or I thought of doing that. Why didn't I do it? So I think it is, if you feel it, like for us, we were just like, that is an amazing idea that we would appreciate as a customer. Why doesn't it exist? And we could envision, envision it. And we're like, it really needs to be. And the minute that we thought of it, and the minute that we came up with the name, which was my husband looking through the thesaurus, and the minute that he said the word drink, I mean, the minute he looked in there, he looked in there for the word drink, and the minute that he said swig, I was like, stop. That's it. Like, I just felt it. Like, can I have a swig of your drink? And so I think that you have to, if you feel it, if you know it, you just have to power through the fears, because it is scary. We didn't take out a business loan. We had no partners. It was all of our savings into this business. We found an old building right there, the original Swig, right there by Dixie State, which is now Utah Tech. And it was a building that used to be a skate ramp park, had really ramps up the side of it. It was an old U-Haul place. It was owned by this gentleman that was like 85 years old, and we liked it because it had a huge parking lot, so we could envision cars wrapped around it, because that's where the vision of it going was, this amazing drink stop that has an amazing drive through that is fast, friendly, and a superior product. Those are our three core values that we still have today. So we needed a big parking lot. So we go to this man, his name's Stan Gubler, back in the day, 2009. And we told him our idea. And he literally looked at us like, that's crazy.
You're insane.
You're insane. Because everybody sells fountain drinks. Everybody sells fountain drinks, from restaurants to gas stations to anything, concessions. Everybody sells fountain drinks. How are you going to make money off of just selling fountain drinks? And we heard that from a lot of people. But we were just like, no. We know this can work. We feel it to our bones, to our core, that this will work. And we're not going to let any doubting people get to us. So we had to stay the course. And maybe that came from, you know, the tenacity of growing up on a farm, where you're just like, no, you stay till the job is done.
Yes.
You have to stay until the job is done, and don't let anything stop you. So from start to finish, the idea came to us in September of 2009. And then we had to cross a lot of hurdles. Finding the building was the first thing. It's our cheapest rent still to date. The store number one. He told us, I just want you kids to succeed, is what he told us. And we were in our late 30s at the time, five children already. So kind of late in the game to be starting your own business, and grassroots starting your own business. Again, no business loan, no partners. Like, here we go, kids. So it is scary, because for the kids' sake as well. But honestly, it was an adventure. The kids were in it working with us. Our two oldest were 16 and 14. And then, like, here we go. So we had 12 employees, and they were two of 12. All of our other kids were at home coming up with drinks, coming up with all different things. It was a family affair. And it was a love-hate. Our kids had to share their parents with Swig. And so it was hard. Like, I have so many memories, and they do too, of driving past the store, because again, you're married to it. I was the manager. I was the person in there at all times. And so was my husband. But we'd drive past the store. We'd finally gone home for the day, and there was a line of cars wrapped, and I knew they needed help. So what do? You go in and help. And I tell the kids, I'm just going to be a few minutes. Never. They now have trust issues with their mom. Yeah. it would be 2 hours. Yeah. Like, literally sitting on, I have a picture of my youngest sitting on about 8 soda bibs stacked up high in the old Swig, the original Swig. And he has this look of like, I hate my life. Ugh. But I think what it taught them, though, is sacrifice, work hard, never give up. Yeah. And we're a team. We're a team.
So incredible. I'm thinking of the times, and I'm sure you did this with your dad, at the
end of a Saturday of working, yeah. and he's like, just one more thing. You're like, yep. it'll never be one more thing.
Never. It'll never be. There's always
It'll
something.
Never be a few more minutes.
There's always something. Yeah, you can't go home till all the cows are milked.
Yeah.
Like, you got to stay up there. Rain, wind, snow, yeah, sun.
Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. So, and I think that's what you kind of need in the restaurant business. Like, you stay till the job's done. If they need you, you go back in.
Yeah.
And that's some advice I would give to, entrepreneurs, especially starting a restaurant, is don't grow too big too fast. Start with the simple stuff and be like, don't get all the fancy equipment that you think you have to have. Start with the grassroots. Like, we had literally a Costco cash register, and we took orders on yellow sticky notes for 3 years.
Wow.
I don't know how we did it, because we had lines wrapped around yellow sticky notes. Like, the process, I was like, how did it work? But it did. It did. We didn't know any better. We were just like, all right, this works. Let's do it. So it was very grassroots. But honestly, I think that's why it worked. And then I always tell people, be in your business. No one is going to protect your business like you will. So be in that store, be in that business, and make sure that you're the one there that's creating that culture of, like, I care for you, and those customers see you day in, day out. We opened it up in the height of the recession, the end of the recession. So it was the start of 2010. People had just lost their homes and their jobs, and weren't going out to dinner as much, but they were coming to do something for themselves, even if it was a drink and a cookie. So people thought we were crazy to open it up at the end of a recession. Like, that's very risky. But I honestly think it was the perfect time to do it, because they wanted to do something for themselves.
And it's not, you know, it's not something giant for themselves.
No.
It's just a little, it's a drink.
Couple dollars.
Yeah. It's a
couple
few dollars.
Of- yep. And we wanted it to be the best part of their day. I wanted to know that customer. I wanted to know their name, their kids. I wanted to know their life. And we see them daily. So yeah. You want to create a connection. Swig is way more than just a drink. It is a connection with people. And that's what we wanted from the start, is I know you, I see you, I love you. That is what Swig is all about. And you get a good drink in the same time.
I love that. So after that first store, and then it became quite successful, obviously.
Yeah.
And then, you know, when along the path did you say, we've got to have more. We've got a franchisor. We've got a. What was that process?
So we aren't franchising yet. Okay. They're all corporate.
They're all still
owned.
Yours. Okay.
We just opened our 40th location, which is like so surreal when you go back to
that's insane.
Start of it all, of like, please, just one store work, please.
Yeah.
So we just opened our 40th location in Cedar City. But yeah, it was 3 years before we opened up our second location. Again, we took our time. Let's make sure this is really going to work. Again, no loans, no partners still. We had lines wrapped around the corner, and we opened our second location just a mile away from our first location in St. George.
Okay.
And it mainly was to relieve the lines of the first location. And this week after we opened it, we got featured on KUTV News as the place to hit for spring breakers. That was 2013, March. And it blew us out of the water. People now wanted to go see what this Swig thing was. And, people coming on the freeway from California, Arizona, up to Utah, wherever, Idaho, spring breakers, like, they all had to come try out Swig. So people started approaching us, investors. And so we're like, you know what, let's grow this. Let's do it. Like, we're actually living the American dream of, like, your business is working and you can expand it. So we brought on partners that summer, mainly financial at that point, so that I could kind of step away from the day to day and be able to focus on opening. And what does that look like? How do we stamp out Swig now? How can we create the same culture and feel and experience in other locations? So we went up to Provo, right across from Cougar Stadium. It was a perfect location. It was an old Pizza Hut. Jimmy Osmond owns the building. Mm-hmm. He came to us and was like, I've heard of this Swig thing. I want to put a Swig here. And so...
Location.
And it's actually a great store for advertising, because people come from all over the world to see their kids that are going to school there. So it actually helped us in advertising as well. And then we opened up to 16 locations in 3 years after that. So we just started, because we were like, will Swig exist in a cold climate? That was kind of the question, because St. George is warm and sunny. And so it was a test for us. And within a week or two, we're like, gangbusters. Mm. Yes, it will. Yeah. So then we're like, let's go. Let's hit the gas. So then we went.
So you just did your 40th, and you are in five states?
Yeah, five states.
So you're just starting in Texas.
Yes, just started in Texas with many, many more to come. Our third location in Oklahoma City area next week in Norman, Oklahoma. So,
and, you know, it's interesting because it's mostly Mountain West except for Texas, right?
Right. And but we get franchise requests from all over the United States, let alone the world.
Wow.
Yeah, like all over. We aren't franchising yet because it's not quite ready for it. I want to make sure that those systems are all ironed out to where that franchisee will do well and the culture will stay the same.
I'm curious because I know in Utah, it's a little bit different culture. And we love soda because there's a large portion of people that don't drink coffee.
Right.
So there's a huge, I think, a replacement, which is
right.
soda.
Yes.
Are you seeing it be as successful in other states?
Yes. Super good question. I get asked that a lot. I've had, we were on the Today Show, which is like crazy town. Like phone call from
a real
NBC
celebrity
Universe.
Here no, on First Lady
I'm
and
not,
Friends.
Not even. I got a phone call that said NBC Universal a couple weeks ago. And I'm like, do I answer that? I answered
Is this
it
a prank?
Yeah, I'm like, come on. But no, we are now catching, you know, nationwide news because of our dirty soda, which is a whole nother topic.
Yeah.
But it's really dirty drinks. And so we have...
explain a little bit of that. I know most people know what that is.
Yes.
But so, just explain what a dirty soda is.
I love
is.
It. We've had dirty soda since day one.
Yeah.
We started getting competition. Copycats.
Yeah.
Within like year three, 2013, there started to be some competitors and they were using that term. And every one of them, they were using the term. Even Maverick had it on their gas pumps for like 6 months. But they were confusing the marketplace. So their coconut at Maverick, sorry, Maverick, was not good. Yeah. And so people, if they got a dirty drink at Maverick, were not going to come to Swig and get a dirty drink because they thought that's what they were.
Mm-hmm.
So we trademarked the term dirty in Utah and a federal trademark. So we spent money and time getting it done to protect it just because we knew, again, I could feel it. I was like, that dirty is going to mean something, and it does mean something. And lo and behold, 8 years later, there's this dirty soda, dirty drink trending all over TikTok, all over Instagram. Millions of views about dirty drinks. And it is now it's coined. Dirty drinks can just mean like creamer or any add-in that you create that you add to your soda, but you can add it to our sparkling water. We have water-based drink. We have sparkling water-based drinks that are actually make up about 25% of our sales. Mm. So we definitely are not just soda. We have our own energy drink that we created called Reviver. So think of us like a, Sonic, Dutch Bros, Starbucks, all into like one, except we don't serve food. So your line will always be fast and you can get any drink that you want at Swig. It is not just soda. It is customized drinks, your favorite drink made your way. But we get to have a lot of people that come just for our water-based drinks. Sparkling water is cool. If I'm going to drink any sparkling thing, it's going to be a Diet Coke though. sparkling water is definitely.
I think it's the state drink.
Yeah,
I would think.
It honestly is. And you know what's funny? When we went to Texas and Oklahoma, it is not the state drink there. It is more Dr. Pepper, root beer, Mountain Dew.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it's not Diet Coke. But we have done extremely well. We've landed so well. And I'm so proud of our business because I know it's going to go everywhere. People are just catching on to it because it is not just about that drink. It is that connection with that customer. They're coming from, we started selling sweet tea down in the South, Oklahoma and Texas, because they drink it.
Yeah.
So it's your drink destination, whether that is caffeine, sparkling water, water, energy drinks. We got you. We can customize that drink. And our Texas and Oklahoma stores are at the top of the pack already. And
That's
they've been
amazing.
Open less than a year.
Amazing.
So the best is yet to come.
So talk to me a little bit about you talk about the treats because you got the drinks, but then I know the Swig cookies are a big thing as well. Yes. So how did that come about?
Yeah, great question. So I knew I'm a baker. I don't bake hardly at all anymore. I mean, I do. It was special occasions, but I loved a good home baked cookie. And there was a bakery down in St. George called Dutchman's. And so I went to the owner back when before we started, and I said, here's what we're going to do. Your cookies are amazing. Would you outsource with us? And he's like, I've never done that before, but yeah, let's try it. So we were getting our cookies from him for the first 2 years. I was driving my Expedition back and forth 20 minutes each way, getting those cookies, frosting my car, smelled like a sugar cookie.
Which isn't all bad.
It was amazing. There's nothing wrong with that.
You can start selling you know, air fresheners that smell like
a
cookie.
It's a sweet cookie. Yeah. And then their bakery flooded. Sadly, disastrously, they had to close down. They didn't even know if they'd open up. It was the end of 2012. So we had to pivot really fast. And we had a baker that was making our cupcakes. And so I went to her and said, can you make cookies? And she's like, I can make a really good cookie. And so I said, I need them to taste just like what we had because I didn't want our customers to skip a beat. And so by this time, we've been open over 2 years and we had some solid customers. And so we tweaked the recipes until we got it just right. And then she became our baker. She no longer is because now we're just large scale and we go with a huge bakery here in Salt Lake City that bakes them by the thousands, which is so amazing, crazy, surreal to say.
So crazy.
And then they get shipped out to all the locations. But that's how it all started.
That's incredible and just wildly successful. And you just hit on something that people love.
I would not have thought the cookies were going to do what they did. I really didn't. I just wanted to have an option. And they literally became like they were on Pinterest, like how to make a Swig cookie. And like I was like, I like free advertising, right? I mean, we really have done hardly any advertising. This all just been word of mouth. And I've always just been a firm believer of if you provide an amazing product with superior customer service, people will talk about you.
Yeah.
And that's all you need to do. I mean, of course, there's times we need to market. When we go to new areas, we need to market for ourselves. But you just need to focus on what you're doing and do it the very best you can. And don't let any distractions get you, like competition or whatever. It's good to have competition because it makes you better. But don't get caught up in the noise. Just focus on what you do and do it your best.
Yeah, that's great advice. I want to talk more. I want to start talking about your journey with cancer.
Yes,
and the amazing things that you're doing in that area of getting people help that they need. So we'll do that when we come right back.
Awesome.
Founder of Swig, just an incredible entrepreneurial story. And your family just putting everything they had into this, and just the outcome has been incredible. And then you went on a journey. You were diagnosed with cancer. Tell us a little bit about that.
So I was actually diagnosed with breast cancer before we started Swig. So I was 37 years old. Was prompted by a friend to go get a mammogram. No history in my family, no symptoms. She had just been, and I'd asked her, when do you think I should get one? She's like, I think everybody should get a baseline mammogram at 35 to know what their healthy breast tissue looks like. I said, okay, well, that's great, but no insurance. We were in between jobs. Yeah, I don't have any symptoms. I'm fine. She asked me 4 more times. And I was like, why are you asking me? She goes, will you just go do it? I said, okay, to a friend. I'm like, okay, if you'll stop asking me, yes, I will go do it. I was like, as I went to go get it done, well, I had to get permission from my OB when I called them and said, I'd like to get, what do they even call it? Like a, it's not prescription, but you know, authorization to go to, the radiology and get a mammogram. And they said, why are you getting a mammogram? And I said, I don't know. I just feel like I should. They're like, okay, well, you know, I have to pay out of pocket for it, which I'm like, that's fine. So I go make the appointment with the radiologist. Same question. Why are you getting a mammogram? I said, I don't know. Just felt like I needed to. Scheduled it. They were like 2 months out because it was nothing serious. The day of my mammogram, it snowed in St. George. It does not snow in St. George. So I got a phone call from the radiologist. It was being done out in Hurricane, which was about a 20-minute drive. out at the Instacare out there. She calls me that morning and she says, I need to get on the road. I live in Escalante. Because of the roads, I'd like to get on the road. Can we reschedule you? And I said, I thought, why am I? And she even said to me, why are you getting this mammogram? And I'm like, really? And I thought in my head, why am I getting this mammogram? This lady needs to get on the road. And I about said, you know what? Let's reschedule. And something inside of me said, you go. And so I said, I can be there right now if you'll wait. And she said, okay, come right now. I got there 20 minutes later and she did the ultrasound or the mammogram and didn't think anything of it. It was Christmas time. I went in and started shopping in town, St. George, for Christmas toys for my kids and got a phone call an hour later. And they said, we see something suspicious. We need you to come in tomorrow for an ultrasound. And my heart dropped. And I just knew something was up. Went in for the ultrasound. They went right to it. I never felt it. Never felt it. It was too deep. It was way deep. And then it was Christmas, and all the surgeons were on vacation for 2 weeks. So I had to go 2 weeks without knowing what it was, but knew it was something. I just could feel it inside, like the intuition. And went in, found out it was cancer after Christmas break. And it was a rare cancer and a very aggressive cancer that doesn't respond to chemotherapy or radiation that's in the connective tissue. So all you can do is cut it out and hope it doesn't come back and hope that it hasn't spread because you can't treat it. Mm-hmm. So if I would have waited until I was 40, I wouldn't be here. Wow. I would not be here. My surgeon said I've only seen two other cases in her 30 years of doing breast cancer surgery removal. I was her second. And she said, your friend saved your life. And so I was relieved at that point that I had listened and got the mammogram and saved my life. But then I had no insurance and I had over $12,000 in medical bills from the hospital stay to the surgeon bill, which was actually pretty cheap comparatively because I didn't have to do any other treatment besides surgery. So I went to the hospital, Dixie Memorial Hospital, and said, here's my situation. No insurance, husband between jobs. What do you have financial assistance? And she said, we have donors that donate money if you qualify. Filled out the paperwork. I remember sitting to this day in the hospital administrative room, and she looks at me and she says, Nicole, can you pay $100? And with tears streaming down my face, I said, I can pay $100. And I wrote a check right there for $100. That's back in the day when you wrote checks. So I then had renewed life. We literally started SWIG. That was January of 2009 when I was diagnosed. We started SWIG April 2010. So it gave us renewed life. And lo and behold, did I ever think I could give back in the way that I did? When you're a cancer survivor, it's not something that you talk a lot about. You kind of keep it close to your heart. And now I wonder, like, are we serving well when we do that? Like, maybe we should be talking more about it and talking about our journey. And I'd opened up to our new partners, like back in 2019 about my cancer journey and how my medical bills were paid for. And then 2020 hit. The pandemic. And we were one of the fortunate restaurants that didn't just survive, but we thrived.
I was going to say, because you have a drive-thru.
So we were essential for those moms that are now teachers and for those healthcare workers that are working day in, day out. We became super busy. And so we wanted to give back after being so blessed through that, those few months that we had to pivot and go really hard. And so he said to me, my partner, Nicole, didn't you have breast cancer? And weren't your medical bills paid for? And I said, oh yeah, I told him the story again. He's like, that's what we're doing. We are going to give back and we're going to give back exactly that way. And so we came up with the term Save the Cups.
Which is just the best.
It honestly is like perfect. Like, save those cups, and then we sell drinks in cups. Like, it, you couldn't have found a better, you know, coin term. So, so now we help women that have been diagnosed with breast cancer we help them pay for their medical bills because it is the very last thing that they are thinking of. They are just focused on saving their lives. That is it. They're focused on their kids, their families, and going through the hard process of all the treatment. And then we come in and we lift that medical debt weight, and it's a weight, mm-hmm. and we lift it. And so the first year we did it, we raised. Now, it's not me. It is our customers. I'm just the voice behind it. The customers are the ones raising this money. They're the ones coming through the lines, buying the drinks. One is my drink. It's the founder. We came up with it for Save the Cups. I've been getting it forever. And I'm like, the world needs to know that this drink exists because it's amazing.
Tell me about the drink. What's in it?
It's Diet Coke with sugar-free coconut syrup, fresh lime, and coconut cream.
Oh, that sounds fabulous.
Yeah. Right? Like, why did we not name it
before
now?
I'm all about lime and coconut.
Yeah, right?
Are you kidding
me? Feel like you're on a beach somewhere.
Yeah.
Fabulous. So you can buy those. There's that drink, and then there's usually like a water-based drink that we term for like a breast cancer term of like the Unbreakable or the Fighter. And so you can buy those drinks, or you can buy stickers that we sell. It's all through the month of October. We also have t-shirts. We have tumblers. Or you can just donate. We've had customers come in and donated $1,000 right in that line. The first year, we raised $161,000.
Incredible.
That we were able to give back all of it to women. The second year, we had some supply chain issues with tumblers, right? 2021, yep. That was the story of our lives. And so we didn't quite get what we wanted to, but we raised another $130,000. Well, it was $135,000. So we've raised a little over $300,000 for women this last year because we were able to actually visit them. The first year we had to do it by Zoom because of the pandemic. This last year, though, we delivered checks in January and February, mm-hmm. Publishers Clearinghouse style. So aww. I show up to their houses. They don't know we're coming with these big checks. We surprised one girl. She was 29 when she was diagnosed at her bridal shower. Yeah. About a tearjerker. We're all bawling. These women have lost their hair. They are going through chemo. They've had mastectomies. It's a very surreal full circle moment for me to be able to give back like that, to be able to be, the means by women can feel a weight lifted and feel joy in their life. And because that what was done for me. Mm-hmm. And to be able to give back like that is nothing like I ever thought I would be able to do. And it's because of this amazing business I've been blessed with. I don't know why I'm so blessed, why I get to do what I do. Going to work for me is a joy and a privilege to be able to work with the team, a team that works so hard. As we grow and expand, it's not easy. And it takes a team to do it. As you go out of state, that's a challenge. But so it takes a village, like it takes so many people. But then to go talk to customers and get to know them. I've had women come through the drive-thru line and they grab my hand. And with tears, they say, thank you for what you're doing. Or people coming through saying, I've had the worst day for whatever reason. And you just cheered me up. Or your team members are awesome and they cheer me up every single day. So we are way more than a drink. We are a community, a business. We're way more than a business. We're the best part of people's day for so many reasons. And I get to do it every day. That's pretty incredible.
So cool. Tell me just as we end here, I want to wrap up, but I want to talk about your kiddos.
Yeah.
You said you're a grandma.
Yes.
So let's talk a little bit. How are they doing now? What's the experience been for them as far as, you know, how has it changed their trajectory of what they want to do or what they want to be or how do they contribute? Just tell us a little bit about how they're doing.
Yes. So I have three married children. Two of them have babies. And then I have two younger ones. And the youngest just graduated from high school. So, wow, that's crazy.
Yeah.
He's about ready to get his mission call to go on an LDS mission. So really cool. They've all been amazing at what they do. I think they have learned that life is going to be hard, but because of the hard, you can know joy. And they've been through a lot. Other things besides the breast cancer and the joys of sharing your parents with the business, but they've all worked in the stores. Mm-hmm. They've been shift leads and assistant managers, and they've all worked it. They love it. I think it's helped them to become the amazing humans that they are by seeing their parents struggle and really grow something from nothing. And to see what Save the Cups is doing, and to have them know that fear of like, my mom, we could have lost her. Yeah. And to have that empathy for people going through cancer and just other things. Somebody starting a business, they're going to be like, I know what you're going through, and that's hard. So they have their business degrees, and they're going and doing their own journey, and I love it. One was a school teacher, yes. Volleyball coach. Yes, the hardest job out there.
Yes.
We love our school teachers. So yeah, one works for Vivint and their marketing. So I hope that they've learned a little bit from us on how to do hard things.
Well, I love that they're doing their own things too,
I do too.
Their own journeys. Yeah. They're not, family businesses are tough.
Yes.
And sometimes when people get back involved, it's tough. We've been in a my husband's been in a family business for, it's for a couple of generations.
Yes. It's so tough. Yeah. I want them to blaze their own path, whatever that may be.
Was that intentional on your part, or did you say, we don't want you back in the business?
Oh, no, not at
or
all.
Or was it like,
in fact,
they all
I would
wanted
be like, please come work after my daughter got home from her mission. I'm like, please come back and work at Swig. And she's like, Mom, I want to go do my own thing. She's an esthetician school. I'm like, sweet. That's better for me too. Like, yeah. I can go get all the facials.
Yeah.
And, it's not intentional at all. I think they want to go do their own thing, and I love it. They also know how hard it is to run a restaurant.
Yeah.
It's really hard. I often tease that it's for crazy people. You have to be a little bit crazy, to work in the restaurant business, but the restaurant business is one of the most fulfilling things out there. Because you get to be the best part of people's day.
Well, and your idea of connection, I think it's very powerful. We've talked here many times about what people really want.
Yeah.
They want connection. Sometimes we find it in dangerous ways when we can't find it in healthy ways. In social media groups that are tribal and angry. But if we find it in the best possible ways, just people to people, empathy, it just brings joy to life. I love that you're doing that.
It's what it's all about. It's about the people. It's connection.
Well, this has been just a delight for me. It's been really good to get to know you and to hear your story. I know our listeners are going to love hearing this, and it's very inspiring. So I really appreciate that.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. You can learn more about Save the Cups and what Swig is doing at swigandsweets.com/savethecups. Thanks for being a friend.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.